Episode 137 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded June 22nd, 2017. Lawnmower Expo. Lawnmower Expo. All right, guys, we have a lot of options for our TV title.
It's exciting. We're recording. I don't know what the title's going to be.
I don't know where we're going to go with, but we sure rambled off a whole bunch of them. So hopefully, thematically, whatever I end up ultimately choosing ties in some way.
That's better than when we used to not. We decide, we're like, oh, we'll just get a title at the end, and then we'd forget, and then you had to make something up on the fly.
Oh, jeez.
It never made any sense to me that you come up with the titles beforehand, because I would think, oh, I'd listen to the episode, and then I'll come up with a title.
I don't listen to our episodes.
Oh, okay. You don't read the transcription that your fans do online?
Oh, no, I read that.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's done in Russian, weirdly.
Oh, yeah, that's weird.
I just read the slash fic.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of Russians that are into our slash fic.
There is plenty of TV Dude slash fic, as we'll find out today.
I'm a big Gandhi fan.
In Russia, granting you.
Oh, God.
No, you guys should be rant.
Oh, God. So we are in our new TV Dudes, our new permanent record studio.
Permanent record.
But we're also calling it the TV Dudes studio for... Yeah. Our own selfish purposes here. And we got a full house right now. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
I'm Mike.
And yeah, all of us are hanging out. Mike's going to hang out with us for this first segment. And we got a lot of shows that we're going to be talking about this week. We're going to be talking about Casual. We're going to check in on this, which I guess is season three.
Three.
And then iZombie is coming to a close pretty soon over on the CW.
Yes, I think also next week's the season finale.
Also season three. Wait a minute. We're also talking about Fargo.
Season three.
Better Call Saul.
Season three. I think we know what the title of our show is.
Lawnmower Expo?
Lawnmower Expo.
Sunday.
You just solidified that it is Lawnmower Expo.
Eight?
Make no sense.
Nope.
A.K.A. 3, the magic number.
Yeah. We'll have to put something else, a little parenthesis in there.
I do love that while we were trying to go, none of us came across that particular nugget until we started talking about the shows.
It just makes so much more sense. Anyway, Fargo and Better Call Saul both just wrapped up their season 3, and we're going to be covering those as well. But before we get into all that, folks, we wanted to say, hey, if you guys like listening to the TV Dudes and you guys want to help us out, go over to patreon.com/TV Dudes. There you can make a per episode pledge. And in exchange, we do a little bonus exclusive content you guys can listen to. We're going to talk about all sorts of different subjects. You know what? Maybe we'll talk about remodeling offices.
Interesting.
Because you're doing that right now, Randy, with your Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas.
Yes, I am.
Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. Do we do that?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's call that a thing from now on.
So tedious. It's so long.
I know.
But we also are, like I mentioned, recording in our new office that Mike and I have been remodeling for past couple weeks.
It's been a couple years, hasn't it?
It feels like forever.
I know I've aged.
Yeah, you take on a little project like this, and then it just keeps going. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. Found more to do.
And then Grant decided to paint Studio 2 like a nursery.
It looked like a nursery.
Like a fucking nursery.
You know, I chose the wrong color blue. Made a big mistake.
You got the periwinkle blue one.
Oh, it's
powder.
It's pretty bad. And I went and looked at it during the day. I was like, in the sunlight, maybe it's not so bad. But then I just looked at it again at night.
No, cartoon Easter Bunny is going to burst into that thing like the Kool-Aid Man.
It's just god-awful. So, more work to do, and that was fucking exhausting painting those two.
Well, it's going to be exhausting again for you.
I guess so. But hey, yes, in addition to patreon.com/TV Dudes.
We got a new patron this week.
You guys, Bill Dean, which we all got to hang out with him at ATX Fest.
Hey, Bill.
Thanks for supporting us. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
We also wanted to say that this month we are giving props to Permanent Record. Usually we're promoting a particular podcast each week of the month. But this month, everyone's promoting us on their podcast.
Aww.
So we're saying, hey, check out Permanent Record itself because it's an amazing network that we're a part of. We're proud to be a part of it. And it covers a whole slew of different angles of TV.
And we just hung out with a bunch of those dudes and ladies and I guess all dudes. We said dudes are gender neutral. With a bunch of those Permanent Record dudes of all genders, yes, at the ATX TV Fest. And it was a blast. And the network has grown. Last year, it was just a few of us, and there were lots more of us this year.
We're cultivating a little family, a little TV family.
We're international.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got Melissa in Canada and Melissa in Canada.
That's right. I feel like Ghost is close to Canada. I don't know exactly where
he goes to Canada every damn weekend to ski.
Ghost is an unspecified location, so he's international at all countries.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I just kind of gave away where he goes on the weekend. Sorry. Oh, he's gonna fucking dox me. If you guys don't know, Ghost is my hacker buddy who does the Mr. Roboto podcast with me.
Yep.
Yeah. Canada's a euphemism for something, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You.
It means in the butt.
Okay. Never mind. It's not
that. Yeah, that could have gone worse.
Anyway, check them out at permanentrcrd.com.
Permanentrcrd.com.
Always on point, guys. You can also ask us questions once a week over on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TVDudes. And we're going to take some listener questions.
All right.
I think we only got a few this week, but I was also barraging people with all of the different interviews and blog posts that Les had done over the week for ATX Fest.
I see you looking at me. I did my job. I did one.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you did this to me last year.
A lot.
Anyway, yes, we got a couple questions here. First one comes to us from Ulysses Carmona, who says, hi, guys. I have a question for you. What are your thoughts on the new formats for international release of airing either the same day or the day after? And will it extend the life of a show we like Better Call Saul, which I've read is experiencing very low ratings? As I believed, the streaming service that distribute the show also work as co-producers, but that I can't really confirm that. So what do you guys think?
So, Les, you had sort of insight of this because you went to one of the network panels and they talked about streaming ratings and, you know, Live Plus 3 and that kind of thing being more important now.
Yeah. Yeah, they said, I mean, I asked point blank during one of the network panels what finally made the difference on why, you know, streaming people used to not be counted, DVRs used to not be counted. I'm not talking about illegal torrenting. I'm talking about people who were legitimately buying the show, mm-hmm, or getting the show the next day and living with that, already kind of being treated a little crappier and next day. Why we weren't even counting towards the ratings. We were watching shows get canceled that we knew people were watching.
Yeah.
Just not the people who still had cable. And they said flat out, advertisers didn't believe them for a while. They just didn't care. Advertisers did not care about our money. They thought everybody's skipping the commercials. We probably were. So, I mean, I don't know what finally solved that, if we're all just watching commercials again or what, but it was advertisers who finally started caring about not just the overnight numbers, but the overnight plus 36 hours. But I still, that still doesn't really answer for me, you know, why, what would make the difference on extending it for overseas? I've never understood why they do these huge delays for these other markets.
See, that's what I was going to say, though, is what it made me think of is that they're starting to look at they're looking at other numbers now. So that's why I think it's reasonable to think, well, they may be looking at international release same day or after, so they can actually see what the international rating is. So they can see with, you know, for example, there's a movie in theaters this weekend called Transformers 5 or Transformers Last Night, and it's dog shit and it's doing terrible. But
it's doing terrible?
No, it's doing terrible. But here's the thing.
Thank God.
It is probably going to hit the international markets.
Oh, sure.
And do huge numbers. And we're probably going to get fucking Transformers 6. Exactly. Warcraft numbers. And I wonder if the TV markets are cluing into this a little bit. Like, oh, let's put out some stuff that, like, Hannibal probably had a bigger international audience than it did nationally. And I think that if they can get the advertisers to buy
Germany, it was pretty big, right?
Yeah, it was big in Germany.
Because they love eating people over there.
They do. And I think that if the international numbers can give them a little bit of goosing, if they can do it without the craziness that Hollywood is at, where they're sort of
they're all aiming their movies at China in weird ways. If we can avoid that little trick, then I think that, yeah, I think that could be, it could help the ratings of something like Better Call Saul, which I didn't know till this minute was not doing well. I just assumed it was doing great.
So but what makes the difference between them doing it sooner versus the weird trend for like,
why delay?
Yeah, well, like I'd go to England and watch like three seasons ago of Castle.
That's a weird reason to go to England.
Yes.
I like Castle.
It was like time travel.
It was. It's like time travel. But they'd be several seasons behind, and yeah. and the commercials would be like the new episode of like no, that yeah. person's dead.
I think it's because torrenting is an international thing. So if you're putting it on more, I mean, look at Sherlock.
They finally just give up and start matching the
timing. Nobody in America was watching Sherlock on Netflix or on Sundance or wherever it was because they were just torrenting it the day it came available in England. Same thing's going on overseas. So if they put it out the day after, less likely to torrent, more likely to watch and see any of the commercials or whatever else.
I imagine it kind of hits a bunch of different things. I think that marketing-wise, they're able to kind of see if they release it the first day, see what the buzz is, and then what kind of response they get the next day in like a secondary release, mm-hmm. they can kind of check the numbers between those. If they're also waiting a little bit before they release something, it makes the first viewing have a particular value add mm-hmm. that they can guarantee to the people that are paying a certain for a certain package, you know, for buying into cable or whatever,
right?
That they would want that. And I think, you know, also being able to kind of toggle between the two, it might just be interesting to see how it plays out in kind of other ways with that little time delay.
Either way, I'm glad they're doing it.
Yeah. We don't have any answers, but we had lots of speculation.
We don't know.
Well, this question made me think about Star Trek Discovery, because that's going to be on the CBS All Access app.
Right.
But next day, it's going to be available internationally on Netflix.
I'm going to go to England to watch Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, why not? I don't want to buy the CBS app.
Or just figure out how to, like, trick your...
Tunnel Bear? Does that still work?
Is that what tricks it into thinking you're in yeah. your country?
Well, and like, I feel like the Stars app does the opposite thing from what most of them do. I was watching American Gods on Sunday mornings, and I think it actually airs Sunday evenings.
They just put it on the same day?
It's just already on the app. Yeah. I don't know what time it goes on, but really early in the morning it goes on the app. So,
well, American Gods is kind of a morning show.
I feel like it's a good Sunday morning show.
Counter-programming.
Our next question comes to us from Zach McLernan.
Who's, and it's all about trolling Grant.
Jumping the gun on the TV news and trolling me. But he says, so it looks like Damon Lindelof has been tasked with developing Watchmen for HBO.
Yay.
I tend to think this could be good in that Lindelof has grown up from his pedantic nonsense directing of Lost to his slightly less pedantic and more depressing yet beautiful directing of The Leftovers.
It's going to be okay.
Thoughts? And then he says in parentheses, I can feel those faceless men after that blasphemy.
See, this is what Zach knows, that when you ask us a question, we're going to read the question. You just wanted Grant to say those words.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is Lindelof a bit pedantic? Yes.
So do we want to talk about Watchmen now? Should we just
let's do it. So Lindelof has, he's developing Watchmen, whether or not that means he's going to be show running. I mean, likely if it gets picked up, he would.
Will.
But I'm excited. I was disappointed with the original.
I'm almost always happy to see people take another swing at a property because at least so far in history, not once has the TV show actually gone through with the threat of grounding up all of the print material and burning it.
Right.
I've not once. And so I still go back and reread Watchmen every once in a while. And then there's another little part, kind of a bigger part of me, that just enjoys the fact that this has got to be trolling the shit out of Alan Moore.
That's kind of where I'm at, too.
Who has been such a universal curmudgeon on literally anything that I assume has paid for the castle he strokes his long beard in.
That's not a
euphemism. I could think he could give a shit by now.
Yeah, you would think not, but I guarantee he is somewhere just fuming over this.
He's still pissed. That's the thing. I have a lot of comic people on my feed, and some of them were so pissed about this, because some of them hate Damon Lindelof because of Lost. And some of them are on board with – they like the Alan Moore. They think that DC really screwed him over and it was a creative fiasco. They promised him creators right and they took him away. And it's all, yeah, I'm on board the whole thing of like, I'm on board creators' rights for comics, but fucking Alan Moore has gone out of his way to shit on the medium from the last 15 years and act like he was the only genius to do it. So, yeah, I don't give a shit what Alan Moore wants. What I want is The Watchmen's a great comic. I think it's borderline unadaptable. It definitely was not going to make a good movie. But if anyone can adapt it, it's going to be to a TV show. And I feel like Lindelof has the credit to do it. So, yeah, I'm excited about this.
I also wanted to say Frank Miller also was groundbreaking and then has shat on his own legacy.
And I'm good on not giving a fuck what Frank Miller thinks about projects at this point either.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm very excited about this. I honestly, this is one of those things I thought would never happen. I mean, they made the movie, and it did okay, but not great. And
but didn't you watch that, like, Watchmen should be adapted to TV.
I feel like the TV format is going to really play out time-wise and pacing-wise to show off the human thematic elements that are there, like what it's saying about deconstructing our heroes.
And should it be 12 episodes exactly?
It should exactly, yes. People have been saying for years that the way to do Watchmen was an HBO miniseries. But none of us thought it was ever going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Do we know where this is landing at all?
It's HBO. He's developing it for HBO.
Very good.
And, you know, this could be just one of those things where they release a statement, they attach Lindelof to it, and they see how it plays out with the audience.
Maybe.
And
then he goes away like Brian Fuller on Star Trek.
Yeah, they're like, oh, no, a lot of people aren't wanting this, or, ooh, this is good buzz. But I feel like doing this type of comic adaptation fits right into the wheelhouse of what HBO has moved into a lot more success with genre.
Well, I also feel like HBO missed out on American Gods.
And they missed out on Preacher.
And they missed out on Preacher, which both of which would have fit perfectly at HBO.
Like 10 years of them supposedly doing Preachers.
And they've got Game of Thrones closing out. And if they can get this ready in time to launch after Game of Thrones, then they've got something to keep the geek audience.
Lindelof coming off left. It makes a lot of sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
And you could, I'm sure they could feel the disturbance in the force coming just when they were typing the headline for the press release for this. Like you could just feel the nerds warming up to explode at any adaptation of like Watchmen. For whatever reason is the sweet spot property on friends of mine telling me this amazing thing that's going to come out in 2 years, followed immediately by why it will suck.
And just add Lindelof to that.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to cut to the noise.
Like, I think Grant was the first person I saw post anything about it. And he, of course, because it's Lindelof, was excited. And I was like, don't mind me, just enjoying hanging out in a space where it's not screaming all caps blasphemy.
Yep.
The fandom reaction to Lindelof, I just still don't get it. Like, no one else holds a writer accountable on those films the way they hold him accountable.
Don't you understand, Grant? He said some things, and then they weren't 100% true accurate because
he engaged an audience. And how dare you have the audacity to engage with an audience?
Yeah,
it's
ridiculous that
you know what, David Chase just tells everyone to go fuck themselves. Yes, and that's what Lindelof should have done.
That's ultimately what happened. Lindelof is a nice, a sensitive nerd guy, and he was not prepared for the backlash. He was not prepared for people to go to open up his heart and to open up his mind and tell people what he thought, and for everyone to go, oh, well, fuck you. I mean, who does that?
I mean,
nerd culture, man. Our geek culture just sucks sometimes.
Didn't Chase just leave the country and keep his middle finger up on a beach somewhere for like 2 weeks?
Yeah, that's the way to deal with it.
For the past 10 years. Yeah. Yes. He's just been like, fuck you. I don't care. I ended it.
I get the feeling that even now people pass him in the street. It went to black and he just, you know, finger up.
Just throttled people.
I think he just has that Journey song on cue. Going, fuck you.
And then he stops playing it halfway through.
Perfect.
Well, one thing about this, and do you guys think Lindelof is going to kind of expand the Watchmen world? Do you want to do that? Because it seems like there's could be so much ancillary material that you can really beef up the TV show with.
I think what I'd want him to do is nail the first season as a perfect adaptation of the graphic novel, the same way he did Leftovers as more or less an adaptation of the book. And then if it's great, do a second season that's his own shit.
Fair enough.
And see.
And people. That's exactly what he proved he can do well.
And that's what I would like to see. I mean, there's some material that the Before Watchmen was the last time people freaked the fuck out about this.
Yep.
Some of that stuff is actually pretty good.
Well, now they're incorporating it into the wider DC universe and people are freaking out.
Oh, man.
Think about both season 2 and 3 of The Leftovers with the flashback scenes where they have the cave woman, and then the scene with the what are they called, the
the Mennonites. Meyerist.
Millerists?
Millerist
is a path. You're right.
Yeah, the Millerists that are standing on the roof, and how that might tie in with the, was it the pirate, the Black Sails or
yeah.
something?
Yeah.
Kind of running a backstory that was going on that they left out of the film for yeah. obvious reasons,
yeah.
but they could yeah. like thematically tie that in with
yeah.
the Watchmen.
Yeah, here. if he's doing a show, the Black Sail better be in there. The Black Pearl, I think, is what it is.
Black
yeah.
Pearl?
No, the Black Pearl's from other Pirates movie.
Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yes.
There's something black and
Pirates
pirate-ish.
Of the Caribbean with the
and Black Sails is the star show.
All pirates look the same to me.
Okay.
So what else do you... We shouldn't linger too much more on this, but do you think that he will distinguish this pretty much from the movie and like keep it more toward what the comic is, a little bit more
100%
grounded, less.
Yeah, the movie was all about the sort of the slow motion action of Zack Snyder, mm-hmm. and it's not the worst movie ever made. In fact, I think if you're going to get a movie of Watchmen, that was probably the best movie of Watchmen we're going to get, sadly. But I expect it to be so different as to them be completely different things.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really hoping that. I mean, for the movie's failures, whole chunks of it just looked like shot straight out of the comic that yeah. were moving in slow motion.
Yeah. yeah.
Which was gorgeous, but I'm really hoping that the show just goes off and tries to keep the spirit of it and does
it was,
whatever.
It was gorgeous, but soulless.
Yep.
And I think Lindelof, if nothing else, will bring the soul yeah. to it.
And there really should be an incredible human heart to this story.
Yeah.
And some international assassin weird. That's
yeah,
what else I want.
That's true, too.
All right, next question comes to us from Benjamin Hamill, who says, "Hey, Groovy Dudes, are there any shows that you respect more than you actually enjoy? For me, it's The Wire. I respect the hell out of The Wire. It's fantastic writing, fantastic acting, and an incredibly ambitious story. But for some reason, I can't really connect to it on that deeper level."
I have numerous shows like this.
Oh, so many.
Oh, yeah.
Mad Men was that for a long time. And still is a little bit. I really liked Mad Men, but I don't think I'll ever watch it again. The Nick, which you and Greg loved. I respect the hell out of it. It's really well done, but I could not plug into it. Just didn't do it for me. And then I know there's a couple others.
I'm with you on The Nick.
Yeah.
I think that's about it. I mean, everything else I really love that I watch.
There's a lot of comedies that I know are groundbreaking and I appreciate, but which make me weirdly melancholy and sad,
mm-hmm.
Which makes them unpleasant to watch. I just find myself constantly stacking up episodes. We're going to discuss one tonight. Casual makes me laugh,
yeah.
but the net effect of coming off those episodes for me is sad.
Yeah.
And I find myself stacking up episodes and going, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah, I can see that. And I like Casual, but I totally
agree. I mean, that show needs to keep getting made. It's incredible. But I just don't want to watch it. Same with Louis.
I had the same problem with Just Shoot Me.
the ennui of Just Shoot Me?
Yeah. Brings me down.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
years at the magazine, man.
Too many.
I think there's something I can respect about the show This Is Us. I'm like, there's some quality entertainment going on there. Just not for me.
Mm. Do you just think Keane Clyde is listening? Is that I hope.
You,
yeah, is that why you said
just
that?
A long troll I'm doing. All right. Michael Gustini says, "Hey, dudes. I'm trying to get in shape, and I have been watching TV while on the treadmill. What shows do you think are best to watch while working out, besides The Flash?"
Daily Show.
Yeah?
Yeah. I used to watch The Daily Show when I was working out because you don't have to pay quite as close attention, so you're sort of like – you don't have to be as focused on story, so if you're suddenly you can't breathe, that's just me working out. You're not missing anything.
Are you afraid of laughing?
I'm afraid of laughing. No, I'm not. I don't ever have a problem with it, especially since Trevor Noah started.
Oh, zing.
No, but I would watch like John Oliver and Trevor Noah and that kind of stuff. The sort of like talk show type stuff is what I used to watch.
I watch Fox News and then I just like try and run and chase them so I can choke them. Biggest Loser, that I would think that's good.
yeah.
And there's something always catchy about that show.
You know, So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars, any of those physical shows. Those are good to give you something to work toward. You're like, oh, or a Ninja Warrior, American Ninja Warrior.
Oh,
or,
fuck yeah, Ninja Warrior.
Or Arrow. Anything that makes you go, oh, I'm fat. I need to keep working out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of those, I have to assume the treadmill's broken and the TV's only on that at the gym, or they've got like three channels and the other two are Fox or something. I used to watch all the Berlanti, like, Fun Time Hour shows. Yeah. Arrow, Flash, like all those in the treadmill are great. And otherwise, I watched brainless action movies. That's why I've seen Tokyo Drift multiple times.
Oh, man.
You're a good man.
I would, but he had to, man.
I would stick with fast-moving comedies like Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. That's what just makes the time move fast, you know, and that's what you want when you're working out. That's what I want when I'm working out.
Okay. We have one more question here.
Oh, good.
This one's from Mike S. Chung, who's back to say, I apologize for not making myself clear 2 weeks ago. What do I have to do to have consensual sex with Grant Davis?
Get his consent.
I just love his voice.
Two heart emojis.
Yeah, I feel get my consent like less this is pretty
dead. That's got to be step one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't read the rest. It says in Canada.
Oh. In Canada.
In Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Canada, anything goes, my friend. Find me, I guess. That's the trick.
I think it's South Carolina where you can't revoke consent.
North
so
Carolina.
It was North Carolina? North Carolina. Where if Grant gave consent once, even if he rescinded the consent.
That's true.
Yeah.
Holy shit, so, is that true?
Yes.
I thought North Carolina was a good Carolina.
Apparently there isn't one.
Okay.
Yeah, no, North Carolina is not a good Carolina.
So if you meet up with Grant in North Carolina, all you got to do is get him to say yes once, and that's blanket.
Is it yes to anything? Hi, is your name Grant?
I'm really hoping there's a statute of limitations on this. I'm terrified that there's not.
I've been to North Carolina. What did I agree to?
Right? No. Okay. Well, hey, Mike, I'm going to have to change my voice, I guess.
Grant, you should talk like this from now on.
This is now my voice.
Got some news. I don't know if you guys heard. Damon Lindelof's doing Watchmen.
Oh,
what?
Yeah, we should talk about that at some point.
Let's spend another 30 minutes.
It's
going to
suck and go nowhere. No.
Okay.
Let's.
But there's also another sort of big creative news. The guys who did Sherlock, Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat, are reuniting for a new Dracula TV show.
Okay. Is it modern day?
We don't know. We don't know what it's going to be. However, if you look at what Moffat has done, in addition to Doctor Who, he did Sherlock, which was taking Sherlock and making it a modern day show. He did Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and he made that a modern show.
Is that the one where he did it? It was called Jekyll?
It was
James
called Jekyll.
Nevitt, I really enjoyed
it's
that.
It's great.
That was pretty good.
I think that's still on Netflix. If people haven't seen it, they should see it. It's just a little miniseries. It's really good. But if I were a betting man, I would say it's going to be a modern day interpretation.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, didn't Mark Gatiss, is he responsible, I think, for some of the really creepier Doctor Who episodes, the more hide-behind-the-couch, like,
Moffat
monster?
Was.
Moffat was? Yeah. Okay.
But Gatiss, who also plays Mycroft Holmes in Sherlock, he has previously expressed a love of Hammer horror films and singled out praise for Peter Cushing's performance in Dracula, which, that's the right headspace to be in, I think.
Yeah, I'm good with Hammer tone Dracula. That's great.
Yeah. So this is exciting. We don't know a lot yet, but it's exciting news.
Yeah.
Less exciting is this headline from Screen Rant. And no, this isn't me making fun of Screen Rant's articles for once. Former Superman Dean Cain wants a Lois and Clark revival.
Oh, do you, buddy?
Yeah.
You want one?
No one is shocked by this. Former Superman Dean Cain would like to get that Hormel commercial he went out for.
Yeah. He would like the largest dressing room, but James Vanderbeek has it on this season of Dances with the Stars.
Yeah. Former Superman Dean Cain wants a Lois and Clark revival. Yeah, that's great. Former Dean Cain wants to work.
Terry Hatcher said, fuck off.
Now, I would watch Terry Hatcher in a Lois and Clark, but I would not cast Dean Cain.
Oh, wouldn't that be even better?
Oh, that'd be amazing.
That would be amazing. I don't know why I have a personal thing. I've never met Dean Cain. I don't know. He might be a really nice guy.
Not what I've heard.
But he kind of looks like a swollen, weird version of himself, and it weirds me out. I don't want him as Superman anymore.
So
Lois and the new and improved Cain, or Clark, rather.
Terry Hatcher says she's also down to get involved. Dean Cain said they'll be happy to take any media format they will be granted, just as long as they're able to finish up Lois and Clark the way the show is supposed to. Oh, there's a quote.
Oh, this is so sad.
Maybe it's 6 episodes. Maybe it's 10 episodes. Maybe it's a 2-hour movie. But I think it would be really interesting to catch up with these two characters 20 years down the line and see what's happened in their lives.
Pick up a fucking comic book.
Yes, people do want to catch up with Lois and Clark. That's why it's always ongoing without you.
If they had children or what's going on with their kids, I think it's really interesting, and I'm certainly willing to. By the way, in the current Superman comic, Superman and Lois are married and have a kid. So we do not need Dean Cain for this. You know what else? You know the last thing Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher were in? Supergirl. Yeah. Terry Hatcher was like the big bad in this season, Supergirl. And she was good, but
was Dean Cain in it too?
Dean Cain plays the dad, their evil dad, their possibly evil dad.
I bet he threw a little bitch fit just to also get in that show.
Yeah, probably so. Smug dad. Yeah. Oh, man.
Ugh, Dean Cain.
Dean Cain would like you to give him some money, please.
That's just so pathetic.
So Netflix is introducing something interesting. Interactive choose your own adventure programming. Right. Now,
I watched some of this the other night.
Oh, good. So this is all kids stuff, right?
So far, it was just the Puss in Boots from Shrek.
Okay. So what's the deal? Does it like pop up and say, do you think Puss in Boots should kill this person or not?
There's a whole lot of
murder.
Of juncture. Like basically the setup for this one is that Puss in Boots gets pulled into like a magic book and there's somebody making him make choices through a story.
Okay.
And to get out of the book, he's got to reach the end of the story. And so there's a lot of junction choices like – or decision points like do you want him to – fight the three bears or make friends with them. And so like he's going through like Goldilocks and he does all the and
does
like
it give you kind of like clues ahead of time of like what you might want to choose.
No, you can choose either one. It doesn't matter. I'm not sure how much they stack up. We tried it a few times and it was a little difficult to work the controller to choose, and at one point it kind of crashed. And so I don't have kids, but all I could think was I bet kids would be flipping out right now, furious. As the tech fails. So I don't
or
know.
They're
that
just so used to it,
or
they're,
they may not care. They just may zone out and be looking at your iPad or phone or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. Well, things kids do.
They're fidget spinners.
Yeah, they're fidget spinners.
Damn kids.
I was super excited about this, and the tech wasn't quite there for me. It didn't work.
Okay, but here's what's exciting. Netflix said that children's program is a natural place to start, but they did not rule out the possibility of interactive programming for other age groups down the line, guys. What Netflix show really needs a choose your own adventure style?
Hemlock Grove.
I think The Ranch.
Oh yeah. Okay. See, I was gonna go Prestige. I think Orange is the New Black. I think you can experience what it's really like to be in a women's prison.
Randy, tonight I'd like you to just go on the internet for a little while and then tell me if you think a crowdsourced choose your own adventure women's prison show is a good idea.
Wait, it's already here.
Or will this end really badly?
Wait, I just searched. It's already available.
Like, that's got to be a thing, right? Like, I mean, I'm sure it's behind a paywall.
I think the people of Twitter can make good, responsible decisions on these kind of things. Yeah.
I feel like we'll get dramatic, long arc storylines, you know, about character growth.
Yeah, I think so too. This is no way going to start off Skynet.
I just keep getting into a lesbian threesome and then dying.
Maybe this
I
is the
only
kind
make it 5 minutes in.
Maybe this is the kind of stuff we need to give to Skynet to
yeah to get
keep
it going
it happy.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good idea.
Like I want when Skynet looks at me later, like hey, remember the Orange is the New Black thing?
I got you laid.
I know how you make decisions now, and you thought it was just great to watch these things.
Yeah, I think we're all going to be glad we can go, look, boobies, and distract Skynet.
Yeah, who knew Choose Your Own Push and Boots was going to become porn for IAI?
That escalated
nobody knew
quickly.
That.
I think we all immediately knew.
Welcome to technology.
So this is a crazy story. Black Lightning's pilot hasn't been filmed yet. You know, the show that CW already picked up from Fox.
But we already saw an entire trailer for this.
Apparently that was a sizzle reel trailer that they made. It was like an 8 to 12 minute presentation.
So they just like cobbled together all those scenes with like it had special effects.
It's like a fan film. It was like a fan film.
Okay, the indie pilot showcase that I went to at the end of Austin Television Festival was just Paul Scheer showing basically what they make. Are like 7 to 17 minute or so
pitches.
Half pilots. Yeah, pitches. Because otherwise it's a game of telephone where, you know, you tell somebody 45 minutes of your show and they tell somebody 30 minutes of it. And then by the time it's in an elevator, who knows what show they're going to green light. So you could at least hand off this like 7-minute movie of the tone. And so I'm kind of wondering if that's what they did. And if that's the case, I feel like CW lucked out.
Yeah.
Because they're going to get to make a CW pilot instead of airing a Fox pilot and then making a CW show off of it.
I think that's true too. I think that's the only thing that might happen is what happened with Supergirl, which is that they came in with this great they saw what expensive special effects could look like, and so then they got to do their CW version of it, so they like they can take the stripped down version and know what worked and know what didn't, and they won't get this really nice expensive Fox version. They're going to start with the CW version.
Either way, when is this thing supposed to air?
It's
how
fast
are they making
it's
this
mid-season
show?
It is not a fall release. It is a mid-season show. But Grant, you were asking before we got on mic about, does this mean they're going to make it put in part of the Arrowverse? And I don't think they will.
Yeah, it's said that they don't really have an intention of that, right?
Because I think Supergirl has worked out pretty well being on like Earth 3, where they can cross over. There's a reason. Vibe can jump universes easily. And so they could easily bring in Black Lightning when they want to, if they want to do a big like crisis story. And if you have him in his own universe, he gets his own bad guys. He gets his own universe. He gets this world where you don't have to worry about like, wait a minute, what was Black Lightning doing being a hero when Supergirl wasn't even on Earth, you know? Or or how could Arrow have not nodded toward the original vigilante Black Lightning when he first started out 5 years ago? So it causes timeline issues when they've already set up that Arrow was like the first villain and Flash of the first, or the first hero, Flash of the first metahumans. If you have Black Lightning before that, well, he was a metahuman. That doesn't really make a lot of sense. So you sort of have to make him his own universe, and then you can cross him over, which I think works out.
Yeah, this has worked out for Supergirl and letting her have this insane number of aliens that are just in the world and known. Like, their presence is known. There are alien bars and stuff where they hang out.
Yeah.
And so you can have that where Flash doesn't have to deal with it.
Exactly. Yeah, he doesn't have to go, oh, I didn't even notice all these aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, did we talk about the fact that the president in Supergirl is a Derlin? That was awesome.
What's a Derlin?
From Legion of Superheroes.
No, we've not discussed it.
What's Legion of Superheroes?
That is the 31st century team that Mon-El was part of. Mm-hmm. And they've been throwing all kinds of nods that direction. I'm just hoping at some point we get a Legion of Superheroes.
I really do too.
That's all I want. The or Legion just an is, episode on Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah. The Legion is so weird and hard on its sleeve that I'm not sure how they can do it, but it would just be so like shiny happy.
Yeah, I would love it. All right. Finally, Netflix is beating cable TV when it comes to subscribers. This doesn't surprise me at all.
In your face, cable TV.
My 2-year anniversary of cutting the cord just hit, and I'm like, when I did that, I was very nervous that I was not going to be able to keep up with all my shows. And in fact, I'm watching way more TV than I ever did.
What's interesting, though, is like it's Netflix. It's not like collective streaming programs are beating
cable. No, they're stomping Amazon, Hulu.
Just
as well.
Netflix itself, who's able to throw out a new or two new shows each month.
Yeah.
I think at least. Other than a handful of things, most people, I think, have the feeling at this point that Netflix will eventually have whatever show.
Yeah.
That even, you know, that I think it's only
just absorb everything.
I think it's only just now starting to happen where the other channels have their own dedicated streaming thing where they might actually hold on to their show for a long while. But it seemed like for the longest time that if you just were patient, eventually all streaming trickled down to Netflix and would eventually be streaming for some period of time on Netflix.
I mean, Amazon still seems like a pretty good contender with how it's able to grab a bunch of shows.
Yeah, but almost everybody I know with Prime still immediately says, yeah, but also for shipping, though.
I get it for the shipping, yeah. And Hulu has Handmaid's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
But really,
Hulu started to have some original.
Stars got some originals, but nothing's caught on. You know what no one has ever said? Hulu and chill. Nobody's ever said that.
No.
No one says, well, I mean, Amazon's great for shipping, like you guys said, but not that kind of shipping. A little bit different.
Yeah, Netflix is dominating, and they deserve to. Their stuff is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless you want to watch sports for, what, $15 to $20 a month?
Yeah.
I don't see how someone else hasn't capitalized on a Netflix of all sports.
Appropriately.
There's like four or five different ones kind of jockeying for it.
How is ESPN Classic not just its own streaming channel?
Yeah, that is a little crazy.
I hate sports, and I lost 3 days of college to that. I know.
By the way, if you want to watch sports, there's like 30 for 30 on Netflix. You're good. You're covered.
Oh, that's right. See? Everything trickles down.
Just watch Friday Night Lights, guys. What else do you really need? We'll be right back.
guys, so I started watching Casual Season 3, which you guys know that Hulu does not stream the same way that Netflix does. They release one episode a week.
Oh, okay.
They don't put the whole thing out. They released...
They tease you.
They started with three this time, which is how I got so far behind. Because I went to watch, and I'm like, okay, got a couple episodes to watch. There were like seven episodes of this up.
Oh,
so okay. I did catch up, but it was like a binge. It was like, because I watched in a few days. And I think Hulu should start releasing their shows this way. I know that Alan Sepinwall just did a big interview about how he doesn't like the Netflix binge model. But I think that's just a TV critic, and because he doesn't like having to watch those that fast. But I'm all about the binge. I enjoyed Casual so much more watching it binging because it's kind of a slow show and it can be kind of a melancholy show. And this way you get the hits of humor a little more rapidly and doesn't feel quite so depressing. Like Les was talking about earlier, it's can be a bit of a downer.
Yeah. Yeah. The what I've gotten to enjoy out of Casual has been because I can't binge it. I mean, I have to watch an episode and enjoy it and walk away. It's like Louis. Like, I don't want to binge watch Louis.
Handmaid's Tale is one that I'm like, okay, I need a little bit.
Burned through three of those in a row, and that was
yeah, and you're like,
angering.
Fuck.
Angering.
But so this is the story of Alex and Valerie. They're brother and sister. They're really weirdly close. Not incest close, but you get the sense of maybe like – it's an inappropriate relationship. Like, the two of them are way too close. Like, they're codependent, basically. She just got divorced because her husband cheated on her. She has her daughter, who's a teenager. They moved in with Alex because he has a startup, and so he has all this money. Well, last season, their shithead father killed himself in California, according to legal. You know, they helped him commit suicide because he was dying anyway. Their mom ran away from the whole thing. And Alex lost his job because he had this whole thing with his ex-girlfriend who was supposed to be marrying his boss, and he basically fucked everything up because Alex is a narcissist.
And his boss was Pete from Mad Men, right?
From Mad Men, yeah.
Did you say this is a comedy?
That's what I was just thinking. Like, yeah. I cannot remember why I stopped watching this comedy last season.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all fucked up people. That's definitely the key to the whole thing. Like, they were raised by shitty parents. They have not developed healthy relationships, and they're definitely carrying on that tradition with Valerie's daughter, who is Laura, who has over the course of this season had an affair with her older photography teacher, who she really wanted to have an affair with, and he was like
been working on that for a while. Yeah.
And then last season there was something else where she had like an inappropriate relationship with someone else older, and then she was dating a kid who had cancer. Who got better, and then she decided she didn't want him anymore. This is a fucked up show, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a fucked up show. But I also find it really funny because occasionally it does that Curb Your Enthusiasm Seinfeld thing where you're like, I can't believe they just did that.
Didn't we do an episode of TV Dudes called Mr. Kids with Cancer?
Oh, we might have.
I don't remember who Mr. Kids with Cancer was.
It probably was me.
It was probably just the shittiest person we could think of. No, I don't think it was you.
Me. I was a kid. I had cancer with kids.
Ah,
that was the prequel.
Yeah, it was a different. Yeah.
So I watched all these episodes, and basically this season is Alex has lost his job and is having to re-enter the job market, and his job was running this OkCupid knockoff named Snooger, and he was great for that job, but he is not skilled for any other tech world, and he's like he meets these younger people, and he's trying to get back into the tech world as like an older guy, and it's just not working out for him, and watching him sort of fumble through. His sort of smugness slowly evaporating is kind of fun. Valerie is having a great deal of casual sex because she broke up with somebody else last season. She's still the divorcee and she's still sort of figuring herself out. And so that's a lot of that is Michaela Watkins. She plays Valerie and she's amazing. And I think that's a lot of what makes the show work is that she's kind of neurotic. She's a therapist who's got her own issues, and watching her sort of stumble through her second single life is really interesting and often very funny. And Alex is renting out part of his big house since Valerie and Laura moved out. He's renting out his house to Airbnb people. So every other episode you get like a new roommate, and there's a bit where there's a couple who comes in and Alex, basically they're sort of Midwesterners touring the California. And Alex basically starts them fighting with one another cause he's dumb and doesn't know that he's going to start these two fighting with one another.
Is that just like a structure that allows for guest stars?
Yeah. Although they're not, nobody famous. Oh, like okay. It's still just like random actors, but his B&B person that he got on like the third or fourth episode is a nerd makeup artist girl. She's very cute. I'm assuming that Allison wind up sleeping with her because they all wind up sleeping with each other on the show. But she had like had her friends over to play Magic the Gathering, and they all dressed in costumes and talked in Renaissance Fair character the whole time.
Was this like real nerd, or was this like all that nerd?
This was okay. She's actually a real nerd. Like she's maybe Ricky Lindholm looking a little bit, you know, but not Ricky Lindholm. Kate Micucci.
Okay.
And so quirky but cute. But this is something we'll talk about when we talk about iZombie. I swear to God, there have got to be nerds in these writers' rooms. Like, you can't tell me that none of them have played Magic the Gathering and know that, in general, people don't fucking dress up to play Magic the Gathering and they don't talk like they're at a Renaissance fair.
No.
No. That's insulting.
And it's really annoying. And I like the character and I kind of like where they went with it. They do a thing where his buddy Leon comes over and sort of gets drawn into it because he's also kind of nerdy. But it's just... it's so off-putting when they get it that wrong.
It's like every time they show like jock dudes, like jock dads gathering for a football watching party, they're all wearing jerseys and eating just shit food all over the table and yelling and punching each other the entire time.
That's what happens, isn't it?
I mean, I've gone to... no. It's always like the heightened version, absurd thing. Like, super macho! Yeah.
But that wouldn't weird me out so much, because if you were to tell me that there are no jocks in the writer's room of a given TV show, I would believe you. But you tell me nobody in that writer's room played Magic the Gathering in college, fuck you, you're lying.
The best example we've had is actually Community when they did the D&D.
Yes, exactly.
Like, that is an appropriate level of, like, there's one person that's going to be a little bit too intense, like Abed. There's other people who are like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. And I feel like that matches... my experience playing D&D. Yeah.
One person that just keeps naming their horse penis.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, my takeaway for people for casual is this. It is kind of a dark show. It can be a little depressing, but it is also very funny and the performances are great. And also, casual writer who I know played Magic the Gathering, they're not going to bully you. Stand up and admit that this is wrong and get it right.
I have to wonder if this is like... you know, having your kid in your class and being harder on them just to make it look extra fair. Like, maybe the writers are like, you know, guys, when we write jock scenes and when we write all these other things, we don't really know what those people do. Maybe we should just act like we're clueless about this one, too.
Yeah.
like they're doubling down on clueless.
We're cool. We don't know what nerds are.
Right?
Maybe. I feel like they're afraid that the alpha writer in the room is going to pants them.
Alpha writer.
So, iZombie has one more episode left.
Yes.
What are you guys thinking?
I'm digging it.
This has always been a show that had a stunning amount of mythology behind it that it just didn't need to have, but it every time it grows, it just gets more and more fun. Like, they've laid out these plot threads early on, like the way that they set up how their zombies happened, and there's this... it was a combination of, like, a bad batch of a party drug, and they've... just continued these weird threads. Like, they've just never quite let them die, and where they've all gone has just kept escalating until at this point it's insane.
We're on the eve of zombie apocalypse. This whole season.
Discovery Day.
The thing is, we've all seen the zombie apocalypse where somebody gets scratched and all of a sudden zombies are everywhere. We've never seen one where the zombies are planning and organizing.
Yes. No, there's a huge zombie. Like, the zombies have a timeline for when they think they'll be discovered.
Yeah, they have Zombie Island. And they're
making a plan.
It's a military corporation named Fillmore Graves.
Okay, the name... we have to stop and talk about the naming on iZombie.
Yes.
Every name on this show just about has something... okay, the district attorney.
Yes.
His last name is Barakas.
Yes.
So put it together. His name is D.A. Barakas.
Yep. Nice. They even made that joke.
Yes. He's now mayor, so the joke doesn't work anymore.
No, but...
so, I mean, granted, she's Liv Moore.
Yeah.
Fillmore Graves.
Yep.
Like, they've done this a lot. I love Major.
Yeah.
Though Major's dog Minor
Major,
was the best.
Major Lily White.
Yes, Major Lily White. That's the plain white dude in this show.
Yep.
So, wait, this was based off of a comic,
yes.
right?
So loosely based.
Yes.
So, this is more being informed by Rob Thomas.
Yes,
than
yeah. so much comic. A Rob Thomas show.
Rob Thomas and Diana Ruggiero White, the people in charge of Veronica Mars.
Weirdly, the iPad, iPhone, whatever reference name is probably the weakest part of the show, and it's the thing they mostly took from the comic, other than Mike Allred's... cover or
opening,
or
yeah, the opening sequence
scene.
Yeah, because the comic is a totally different, weird, quirky thing. This is very different. And I thought when they started this first season, where they were dealing with some like, there were some zombies that were killed that Clive is now in on the... this is, by the way, the superhero shows do this slowly but surely. Everybody learns the secret identity, and every time some supporting character learns the secret identity, the show gets better.
Yes.
Every time that everybody's on the inside. So by the time we start season three, everybody's on the inside. Her roommate knows. Her partner, her cop partner, was the last guy to learn.
Clive's reaction is in every scene is my favorite.
Yeah. And so you get the benefit of, you got this guy who's new to all the zombie stuff and can roll his eyes at it and be like, I can't believe you're doing this, but who also still knows. Like,
and every third or fourth time goes, I wish I could just go back to you guys not having told me this.
But some of this, you know, a family that he knows gets killed, and it seems like they're being killed by these zombie hunting rednecks who think zombies are real. Major is a zombie who's losing his mind and is working for this Fillmore Graves Corporation because he was thought to be a serial killer. And they don't drop any of this stuff. They put them in these positions. And then they go further with it.
Yeah. And ironically, this is a show that started out so Case of the Week and has never changed that.
They still do Case of the Week.
They still do Case of the Week. There is always a Case of the Week that is always the primary thing going on. And at the same time, they've never let any of their back threads drop. Their backstory has always just gotten deeper and crazier, more escalated.
Yeah.
It is an impressive show that has just become more and more fun to watch. Like, I have to go back and rewatch it, not because Kimmy Schmidt I rewatch because there's jokes packed inside jokes.
Sure.
I rewatch this because I miss tiny subplot things.
Yeah.
There's so much going on in this show.
Yeah, but it's never overwhelming. Like, there's a lot going on, but you never feel like, oh, what's even happening? Like, I can always find the thread.
Mm-hmm.
But their Case of the Week stuff was really fun too. Liv got a little our friend Kat Burke mentioned this, that Liv seemed to go a little method actor this year. Like, when she had a brain, she really went into it. When she was the dominatrix, they really played that up because it was fun having Liv being the dominatrix.
Yeah. They've leaned into that a little bit more, I feel. And they've also this season introduced Ravi's blue brain juice.
Yes, which is another good thing. But then they did the 20-sided die episode where a DM gets killed by his players, and I almost couldn't watch this episode. I understand that D&D is nerdy. I get it, believe me. But it's not that nerdy.
It was way worse than
she suddenly carries a 20-sided die around and uses it to make every decision.
Yeah, that's not D&D. That's OCD.
Yeah.
That's a whole other game. She would say, she's like, did I do this? She rolls, it's a 19. She's like, yes, I do. And I'm like, what the fuck? You're in real life right now. No one does that unless
Rob Thomas should know better.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. I know damn well that you've got to know someone in the writer's room knows some nerds that know well enough that if you get pulled into a police investigation and are set down in the interrogation room and asked about a murder, you'll drop the fake English accent.
Yeah, what the fuck?
You'll
man?
Take your fucking cloak off and you'll be serious for that hour because you're terrified.
Yeah.
There's no way that you hold it together and act all goth. Yeah. And
I get what they're doing. I get they want to sell the
it's
theme.
It's a show. But it's funny. I know.
But it was obnoxious.
Yeah.
It was almost redeemed, though, by Ravi and Clive getting super into playing D&D.
No, Clive trying to figure out when they were going to play again next was he literally 180s from why are you making me sit down to do this to, like, I think next week I could really kill that battle orc.
Yeah, and Peyton not wanting anything to do with it made a lot of sense, too. Yes. That perfect sense. So, yeah, the last few episodes, they're going heavy into the redneck zombie hunters. There's a reporter who's figuring out what's going on, and it looks like we are heading straight to Zombie Day.
Yeah, this is a show that I actually want to go back and rewatch, and it was so Monster of the Week when it started that I thought, this isn't going to be a really rewatchable show, and I actually want to go watch this whole thing escalate from the start. There's so many threads.
The other thing that I thought they did really well this year was their bad guy, good guy problem. You know, the spike problem where you get a bad guy you love so much you keep him around. I was really worried they were going to do that with, I forget what his name
Blaine.
Is. Blaine. Because Blaine, he's a great actor.
David Anders.
And I was worried that they were going to lose his edge because they basically had him get amnesia because of the zombie cure. And it seemed like they were going.
The way they played that out is amazing.
And the way they played it was amazing. And they managed to do it without turning him back into a straight up villain.
But he's a shithead enough that you see why. It's just wonderful. It's wonderful. And it has ramifications not only for his character, but it makes, like, two other subplots incredibly poignant.
Yeah. They must have a board where they connect all these, like a fiasco board where they connect all the characters.
Really, there's got to be not a murder
Isn't
board.
Isn't David Anders
board.
Sark?
He was Sark.
Yes.
And here he's playing a sort of douchebaggy evil zombie who sells brains.
He's not doing a British accent.
No. He looks like a Billy Idol, though, basically.
Yeah. But one of the things that I thought was interesting is
Robert
that
he's
such a good bad guy. And yet you talked about this a little bit with some other shows where you get like Alias or some other shows where at the end of them, the writers room managed to be like, how do we knock this guy? If they go in the room together, they're going to kill each other. And they managed to do a thing with Blaine where he should have been that guy for them. And they managed to pull it back where I'm like, oh, no, I believe that they're working with him now because things have gotten weird enough.
You said you're one episode behind, right?
I'm one episode behind.
So at the end of the one you saw,
yeah.
Had they just taken care of the zombie rednecks?
Yes.
So All of them sitting together.
Eating the brain.
Yeah. It was
a great moment.
With even Blaine mentioning like, yeah, we should do this again. I mean, I know y'all hate me, but.
Yeah, that was super fun. And I don't remember what his Donnie?
Yes, Don E.
Donnie really grew on me this season.
Don E.
Yes.
I love the show.
Yeah, it's really good. I feel like a lot of people aren't watching it, and a lot of people are like, hi, zombie, what's that? But it's really good.
So Fargo just wrapped up its third season.
Yes.
This is still, would you still say this is your favorite show that's on TV?
Yes.
Because I've heard a lot of complaints from people this season, and I feel like there's a lot of strengths to this, but there were some problems this season as well. In the middle of it, it seemed a little bit plodding and slow.
Oh, man. Anytime Nikki Swango was on the screen, I was 100% into it. Anytime that David Thewlis's V.M. Varga was on the screen.
Those two characters, like, but stole the scene.
David Thewlis is on this?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was on TV. That's freaking awesome.
And he's amazing. But they're in 90% of the show.
Well, I mean, Carrie Coon is the lead.
Carrie Coon is also amazing.
She's a fantastic actress, but I feel like they don't give her enough to do here.
Oh, I thought she was fantastic here. I agree that she's not given the same prominence she was in Leftovers, but Leftovers is her show. This is an ensemble piece.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this whole season.
Yeah.
And now we've gotten to the finale. What do you think of the finale?
I loved the finale. First of all, the penultimate episode, which we saw at ATX last week.
Holy shit.
Was fantastic. And
it was
so
great.
I was waiting to see where they pick up all that stuff. Basically, putting Nikki Swango and Mr. Wrench up against V.M. Varga and his crew, that alone made for a great finale.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way that Nikki's final showdown with Stussy and the cop played out, my wife has not watched a single moment of Fargo, the TV show, but she was in the room watching that with me. And when that came, she started laughing hysterically. She's like, I did not realize what happened for a second there. And she was just like, that was a really great moment. It's a very Fargo moment because it feels like everybody doesn't necessarily win. Sometimes things don't go well. And so I thought,
I was very sad though that we're not going to get any more Nikki Swango.
You know what? I'm okay with. I don't think I want any more Nikki Swango. I don't want more any. I like all these characters, with the exception, of course, of Mr. Wrench, to be only in their season. Mr. Wrench should be when they do Fargo 2073. The cyborg remnants of Mr. Wrench should still be in it.
I mean, I just felt like I loved most of this episode.
Yeah.
I thought how they resolved a lot of the characters was pretty fantastic. Mm-hmm. I felt overall this ends even more on just a bummer note.
Oh, I disagree. I like that it's a choose your own ending.
In a lot of ways, this has so many parallels to The Leftovers.
Yeah.
And a lot of them revolve around Carrie Coon. But also this idea that the viewer can kind of interpret that final scene how they want.
I love that. I love that thing.
Or at least they can either optimistically or pessimistically kind of play into how they think something will play out.
We are given two possible outcomes by the two different characters, and we don't get to see which one is the true outcome. And so how your worldview is how you inform which one you think is going to happen. I didn't need to see that. I didn't need to see it happen. In fact, I would have been disappointed if they'd shown us one way or the other.
I don't know. I mean, I come at it two different ways. Yes, I stopped and thought about it for a bit.
Yeah.
But then I was also kind of like, I feel owed that.
Did you? I didn't. I wouldn't have wanted it. I liked the ambiguity of the ending. The other thing I want to say is
I'm very mixed on
Noah Hawley is so good at the way he plays with time and the way he plays with convention because – first of all, they jumped ahead in time again, not quite as much as they did in the previous seasons, but this it does say it's in 2011, which is a year later, you know, because it was a Christmas.
Yeah.
So we're a little bit later. And then toward the end of the episode, they jump ahead.
5 more years, yeah.
To what seems to be Stussy's weirdly happy ending. So it looks like, oh, and they do like the little text crawl, and I'm like, oh, this is the ending. So we get the thing, we see him, his family, And then we get that big reveal that it wasn't so much the happy ending for him, which I did not see coming. I don't know why I didn't think of that, but it was a big surprise to me. And then we get this last little epilogue that's with Carrie Coon, where we see what her character, where Gloria Bargle and VM Varga, whatever his fucking name was at the end.
Yeah. It was Danny Rand.
Was it Daniel Rand, really?
Daniel Rand.
Oh, that's fantastic. But we get this little epilogue of – because every expectation is once you do the text crawl and it's like, this is what happened to this guy, that's the end of the show.
Yeah.
And so that the last moment was going to be that moment with Stussy.
Yeah.
And then we get a cutaway and we get back to her. I did not see that ending coming. And so I felt like that was almost a tacked on thematic ending. It was like, we know you're going to want to see what happens with these characters, but it's really not consequential to the story. The story ended with Stussy and what happened with him. But did you notice the music comes back up? And I wasn't sure, but I think it might have been the music from the Peter and the Wolf. And so it was that theme of the music was doing the challenge between the two characters, even as we were watching it play out. And I love seeing her. I like to know that she sort of landed on her feet. I like seeing her in a position over where she knew more than Varga in a way. You know, he didn't. I don't know if he legitimately didn't remember her or if that was a power move. I'm honestly not sure.
Yeah.
But I really liked that.
I don't think he remembered her.
I don't think he did either.
It was such a small meeting. And yeah. I think that he would just outright dismiss who he was.
So I really liked that last finale, and I liked that we didn't find out. I was really happy with that last bit. And then of course, you know, everything to do with Wrench and Nikki Swango when they went full revenge mode was super fun to watch.
Yeah. I think I'm mostly with you. There was just, you know, I was like, do I want that resolution? Do I want
to
know?
You wanted to know what the Members Only Jacket guy did.
Yeah. That's all I wanted. But I guess I don't need it. And yeah. I'm pretty satisfied with how it ended.
I was very happy with it. I need to rewatch all three seasons to see which one's my favorite, because I really did love that first season. But I think this was my favorite season.
It's just everything was sad.
Yeah.
I guess you could say Bergo had a happy ending. I didn't really feel it was a happy ending.
I felt like it was. She got to go work somewhere that she actually got a little bit more respect.
I feel like they never enriched her character as much as the other ones. That's for me fair. To feel rewarded by where she was.
Okay.
It just felt like she was unhappy with her current job. And, I mean, I got a little sense of her life with her kid and her husband's situation,
yeah.
But not enough that, like, it just didn't have, I guess, the impact that I was kind of hoping it would have fair. For her.
I think you're unfairly comparing it to Leftovers.
I can't help but do it.
And that's not fair because she was the lead in Leftovers and this was an ensemble.
Yes, you're correct.
I think that's where that's coming from.
They're both kind of ensembles.
Yeah, but Leftovers, I mean,
she was a shared lead.
Lindelof even said that she was the lead. He's like, you open your show and you close your show with the lead, you know? Like,
Yeah. Okay, that's fair.
All right.
Ultimately, pretty fantastic season. How would you rank the three?
I think right now it goes 3-1-2.
3-1-2.
But I need to rewatch one and see if that changes.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back to him. I think that Holly has learned and grown as he goes through them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely say 3.
Yeah. And I love season 2. But I feel like it's
recency.
Stronger.
Just am digging this one the most. All right. Well, let's go ahead and jump over to Better Call Saul.
My other favorite TV show.
Man.
Yeah. My two fantastic. Favorite TV shows run simultaneously and end simultaneously. So
here's what I'll say.
Okay.
Michael McKean needs to win Best Supporting Actor.
He was fantastic in this.
So good.
Yeah.
And I was like, we don't see Mike Ehrmantraut this whole episode.
No, you're right. I'd totally forgotten that.
And this
only
focuses,
a little bit of Gus, really.
Yeah, it focuses mainly on what's going on with Chuck and Jimmy.
Uh-huh.
What's going on with what's your name?
Ray. Yeah,
that's her real name.
Ray Seahorn is his name. Yeah, Kim.
Kim. What's going on with Kim? And then it goes a little bit into what's going on with Nacho.
Yeah. Which, that story got really well developed this season, where we started to see his sort of conscience a little bit. Isn't he cousins of Tuco? Isn't he Tuco's cousin? And he's the smarter cousin, and we definitely saw that here.
From the start of the entire Better Call Saul show, like as soon as they introduced Nacho, and I was like, ah, oh, crap, I know you don't survive into Breaking Bad, and I like you so much more than Tuco.
Yeah.
Well, we got a big moment at the end of this episode with Nacho and Don Hector.
Yeah. They have such great tension with all the scenes with him and what he's going through with Hector.
Can we talk about Mark Margolis and how good he is?
I've loved that guy since Oz when I first saw him there.
He's so good. He was so good in Better Call Saul. Or in Breaking Bad when we got to see the flashback to him as like a swinging dick gangster.
That role reminds me of what's her name from The Leftovers in the wheelchair also, who's comatose the whole time.
Yeah, but I'm saying when they did the flashbacks and showed
him. You just don't get to do anything for so many seasons.
When they showed him the flashbacks, he got to do more than Janelle Monáe ever got to do. I don't know why she was on that show.
And this is Hector Salamanca, right?
Yeah. Ultimately, now that we see where this kind of ends, where Leftovers ended for her, I'm like, what?
Why?
Why did she get cast? She got screwed
that
over.
That was a waste of her, And I did not feel that way about Mark Margolis because, he was in the wheelchair for a lot of Breaking Bad, but then he got to play some interesting flashback stuff.
But she's going
to
be Silk Spectre in Watchmen, so it's going to be great.
You're probably right. But in Better Call Saul, Don Hector has been a really big story.
Yeah.
And has had some really good moments this season. And the tension between him and Gus and how much he hates Gus is so fascinating. The only thing that frustrates me about this is I really want to know what the deal is with Gus's background. Is it in Peru? No.
Chile. They call him the Chilean.
What is it about? Because there was some reason they couldn't just kill him. Like
he had some weird connections. And I think – I don't know my Chilean history enough, but I know there was some like big overthrow of the government.
I want to know what that connection is. I was hoping with the prequel, with Better Call Saul being a prequel, we might see it. I'm thinking we're never going to find out.
Yeah.
Well, when Better Call Saul ends and we get our Gus show.
Better Call Gus?
Yeah.
South of the Border with Gus?
Yes.
You know, I was thinking the other day, what if this show tries to deviate and make it an alternate reality from Breaking Bad?
I don't want them to do that.
What if all of a sudden they try and shift and be like, what if there was no Walter White? He just happened to want to be working in the Cinnabon. It's not going to happen.
My hope for the finale of Better Call Saul, which I hope is coming in like 2 seasons. I feel like they shouldn't go too much longer than that.
Yeah.
Much as I love Better Call Saul, I don't want it to run too long. I think that would ruin both its legacy and legacy of Breaking Bad. It's somehow still carrying both. I want like the final season to be the true sequel to Breaking Bad. I want to see something come up where Jimmy has to become Saul again, where he has the Cinnabon cover is blown or something like that. Somebody's after him, and we have to see him go back into Saul mode. I want to see that happen.
Ideally, I'd want 3 seasons. I want I want the end of next season to have him run into Walter White where he first meets.
Yeah, yeah.
The next season, I want to be like a straight Parallax season.
Breaking Bad from his point of view.
5 seasons.
All of Breaking Bad from Jimmy's side.
All his perspective. Yeah. And what he's going through.
Yes.
I would love to see that.
Yeah.
It'd be so
fascinating. Mike's point of view too.
I mean, you remember Ender's Shadow?
No.
Yeah. No, all the Bean books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ender's Shadow, that book. Oh, they're amazing. Yeah. Ender's game is so great, but Ender's Shadow, you're like,
but yeah, they're
that's such a fantastic.
Yeah. There's basically a parallel set of books to the series.
Yeah. You're right. We need that.
Yeah.
But then I really
and then
I would almost want to see him if they weren't going to show that just jump straight from like let a series finish with, you know, end episode like, oh, you're who, Walter White, you know, go to credits, and then the next season premiere pick up right after, or you know, him sitting there watching TV after the Cinnabon shift and pick up from there, cuz like so you saw what happened, you know, previously on Better Call Saul. That's all of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And then, time jump forward.
I do love the idea of seeing Breaking Bad.
I would love to see the whole parallel, especially with Mike and everybody.
Right? Yeah. If they could do 6 seasons of this show.
Yeah, and I mean, a movie.
The ratings, I don't know, but also it's Vince Gilligan.
Yeah.
And I feel like if they owe anyone on AMC to just let them have what they want.
I agree. I think that's the
thing. This will pay off.
I would watch 10 seasons of Mike doing nothing. I would watch Mike Erland Trout just go to work and go home. He could work anywhere. He could just be a 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
I wonder what happens to him in the future with Jimmy.
I hope it goes well for him. I like that guy.
He's going to be a cyborg, right?
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah. I just hope he lives through.
So what do you think about Chuck?
Chuck's a monster.
Yeah. I mean, I know that you just think he's the villain of
Chuck's,
the show.
Chuck's a monster, and I think he got everything that was coming to him.
I love how they pit the two brothers this season against each other. I thought that he makes a great foe for him.
Yeah,
I do. In a way that I kind of, like, they really earned it. They really built up to it.
That moment where he tells him that he's trying to play it cool, and he tells him he never gave a shit about him, that is fucking cold. That is maybe the coldest thing Chuck's done to him.
Yes, but you also saw what that did to Chuck, which I thought, I'm glad that you see it wasn't real.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He lashed out. He wanted to hurt Jimmy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said the meanest thing he could to try and show, like, I'm independent from you. I'm going to be okay. I don't need you, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it breaks him.
But you know what's interesting? I've been on Jimmy's side for a lot of this. No matter when Jimmy does something awful, I'm generally of the, oh, you know, he's just trying to get around Chuck, or, you know, he's cutting some rules. But what he did to Helen was so mean and so unforgivable, and I thought it was interesting to show that. I thought that was really
wait, who?
Isn't it Helen, the older woman?
Oh, what Jimmy does.
Yeah, what Jimmy did to her was so cruel.
But,
and I love that he walked it back.
He redeems himself.
But man, to do that in the first place, it was really cruel.
Oh, it was so rotten.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, that's him showing that he recognizes his power to be able to achieve those things if he wants to set forth and, like, attack from that angle.
Yeah.
Like he says, I'm great at dismantling stuff. I'm not as good at building stuff back up. And so for him to still have at least enough of a conscience right now to dismantle himself in a sort of redemption.
But that realization is also a step down the road to Saul. When he realizes that he can't build like he wants to build, I feel like all he needs to do at this point is lose Kim, and I understand exactly where he becomes Saul.
And I'm behind on where it's arced up with Chuck. I'm behind several episodes. But for me, the entire show is from the moment they established Chuck as the main foil, as this thing that was going to become a villain, even though it's just made more and more sense everywhere they've gone with it, that this is the only villain that could really give me Saul later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because this is Slippin' Jimmy trying his damnedest to turn back to family and to do what's right and to make his brother proud and to be the good son to the dad that actually raised him.
And the only one who could help him to become this good person would be Chuck to reach out a hand to him instead of being jealous.
Every turn, even when he's succeeded, it's been bullshit. When Chuck first showed his true colors of telling him, like, I don't care that you became a lawyer and passed the bar.
Yeah.
In fact, it makes it worse. You make a mockery of my achievements by having your Slippin' Jimmy version of it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you could just see that. You knew right then that, like, Chuck's going to keep doing this and Jimmy's going to keep running at the football.
Yeah.
And by the time Chuck finally breaks him of this quit trying to be loyal to people who love you, you're going to be left with a bad, bad person.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, at the end of this season, that's what I'm kind of wondering. Like, Jimmy has lost his reputation.
Yeah.
Lost his business stronghold that he would have been able to come back to after a year, ultimately, because he has to redeem himself. And then with Chuck, does he kind of lose his name there?
Yeah, to some extent.
Like, he can't go back and use the McGill name.
Like now. I say, he has one thing left, and that is Kim.
And we see the relationship with Kim kind of slipping because,
although she still loves him and she's still trying, and I think that's a big thing.
We actually see them kind of like holding hands, kissing a little bit more than ever we usually do.
Yeah, but I think she's recognized for him for who he is, but she's not ready to give him up. And I think that's what's going to be the final thing that breaks is when she realizes
I don't know
they can't be the same person.
Like, I feel like what we were seeing there was her kind of falling into, like, at least she was driven before. With passion to kind of do what she wanted with job.
Right.
And then she kind of falls back into just like letting him handle stuff in a way that does not seem healthy for her, for who she is.
Okay.
Independent from him, which was what I thought was like helping make that work.
Yeah.
And if she's going to fall into that and see the other side of him, I think that'll be the final straw.
It may be.
In a weird way, in the relative morality of Breaking Bad, and I haven't rewatched the show to see if this really bears out, but I kind of felt like Breaking Bad was a little bit of watching Saul find his line again.
Yeah.
Like meeting Walter, somehow working for Gus was one thing, but then, or working for whoever, but meeting Walter was this like, yeah. No, man, I don't think I want to go there. Like,
yeah, he's like you know what? Like I don't want to murder anyone.
I feel like we saw Saul at a moment, didn't realize it at the time, but saw him kind of find a line again, which was only possible in the relative scale of the cesspool he lived in.
I think you're right.
So I'm really wondering if Better Call Saul is going to do something kind of unique in a television show where we watch him lose Kim. We watch him become a worse person than when we met him at the start of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
We watch him finish this show at the dark point that lets him be the guy that ends up being the lawyer for the worst up being an available lawyer for a Walter White who comes on the scene.
Yeah. No, I think that's 100% where we're
like
going.
This could end up being the darkest end for a character where, you know, this show inevitably has to end with him at his lowest point in his life.
But I think that's why they also do the flash forwards,
because then they can pick back up.
Because then they can do a little redemption arc.
So did you ever think that when the very first episode of Better Call Saul started, that the flash forwards to his sad ass watching TV after
the
Cinnabon
part
was going to be the optimistic ending?
Right.
Actually, what if the last season is a black and white French style comedy, like wacky hijinks at the mall?
It's going to be that Charlie Chaplin.
Yes, exactly.
Benny Hill music.
Okay. Well, Fargo, Better Call Saul, those two have just blown me away.
Yep.
I'm very interested. We're kind of at the halfway point of this year.
Yeah.
I'm interested in like where all these shows are going to rank because we have so many great new ones. We haven't even talked about The Handmaid's Tale.
Nope.
We're going to talk about
American
next
Gods.
Week.
Yeah, Handmaid's Tale. There's stuff on TV that's just astonishingly good.
Well, Game of Thrones is still coming back, which I know is exciting for me and Grant. Insecure, which had that killer first season.
Catastrophe.
Snowfall, which we saw the first episode and like. Curious to see if that makes it into the. We've
Glow.
Got Glow, Defenders, which could turn out to be a big thing. Plus, there's like 8 new Netflix shows coming on.
I feel like I can pretty much bank on Defenders disappointing me.
Me too, but you never know. Star Trek Discovery, which could be a surprise. And then The Deuce, the new porn thing from David Simon, right?
Oh, shit. I forgot about that one.
There's all kinds of shit coming up this year.
I guarantee there's 5 shows we've not named that are slipping our minds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Stranger Things 2.
Stranger Things 2.
And Halloween. I'm excited.
Yep.
All right, guys. We're going to call it a wrap there. Hopefully the audio quality is a little bit better this week as we're continuing to tweak this office. Very excited about this. Our new permanent record studio.
Permanent record.
I only said it so you guys would do that. All right, guys. Until next week.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.